Welcome to the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. I am your host, Megan Kenny. Let's get started. Up, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Third Realm Integration Podcast. What's going on with everybody out there today? How we doing? How's life going? What's on your mind today, you guys? What energy are you bringing to the sphere, to the energetic sphere that we're in at this moment for this episode? How's everybody feeling? What's the deal? All right, so here's what we're going to do today. We're going to unpack the many variations of the child archetype. Now, this one is obviously complex, just like all the archetypes are. This is one of the four survival archetypes that I broke down in the last two episodes ago. We went over the victim archetype in the last episode, and now we're going to drop into the child. Now, it's interesting because the child archetype seems to be kind of like a force to be reckoned with when the adult is stuck in the child. And I think, you know, it's kind of funny because I went back and listened to the victim archetype episode that I did, and I noticed the tone in my voice was definitely elevated. It was pinged. It was like a ping had happened as I was unpacking that archetype. And I think these two, the child and the victim, both really bring out a lot of the parts of ourself that are left unintegrated. So from a therapist's perspective, the child and the victim are the two that therapists typically have the strongest reaction to, at least in my experience. I've seen how other therapists respond to an adult who's coming to therapy, whose child archetype is the one kind of showing up to the session. And other therapists that might not do therapy anymore, but speak as teachers on public platforms, for example, as they're talking about this particular archetype, have a tough time with tolerating these two. These two are tough. I mean, these two, the victim and the child, are likely the two archetypes that if you're starting to notice that people are saying that they're kind of like, they kind of like have had it with you and they're kind of like moving away from you, ask yourself whether or not one of these two are showing up. It might be kind of at the source as to why people are starting to back away. Because once we start moving into the adult world of responsibility and independence, which is what the child archetype is all about, and resourcefulness, so being able to kind of handle yourself, being able to tolerate some stuff, being able to hear some stuff, being able to do the deeper work, and being able to recognize when it's appropriate for the child to be present and when it's not, that this is sort of like the core feature of this. And a lot of times what happens is the child will come out when there is some part of that person that is still so attached to some aspect of their childhood. So typically it's around neglect or abuse or a lack of nurturance that they're still so attached to that they're now stuck in arrested development. And this is the domineering archetype in their family of archetypes that overshadows the adult from actually being able to be the one that drives the boat. So, you know, if you look at the style of therapy that Gabor Mate and the Compassionate Inquiry course teaches, they teach a very different style. Their perspective is that, it's because Gabor Mate worked with such severely traumatized people when he started his work, that he found that it was helpful for the therapist to go in and reparent that child. I will tell you, most therapists don't want to do that because it takes a lot out of the therapist if that is not where they are naturally inclined to go. And maybe Gabor is naturally inclined to go there. So he teaches that because it doesn't drain him to see his role as the parent that's going to reparent that adult child now in the therapy session. And so they're going to really, from that style of therapy, they're going to really tend to the needs of the child and really nurture and really give that person a new parental experience. That's rare that most therapists are going to take that approach. And if they do take that approach, chances are they're going to burn themselves out by doing that, because that's a really hard thing to do. And there's an argument to be made that that's not even helpful, that the adult now, regardless of what happened in childhood, is now expected to grieve the moving on from that childhood, regardless of what good, bad, and different. We're kind of like, doesn't really matter at that point. It's kind of like when Carolyn Mace talks about how she just, like when people are like, oh, I was abused as a child, I was trauma, and she's like, okay, and, you know, like it sounds kind of cold. But at this stage of the game, being an adult, there's really not a whole lot of space for that inner child to be the one that kind of dictates the whole course of that life, of that person's adult life development. So let's just start with the basics on the essence of the child, and then we're going to get into all of the different variations of the child. I'm going to go over the wounded or the orphan child, the magical child, the divine child, the nature child, eternal child, and then we're going to land with the dependent child. And just keep in mind that the archetypes are fluid. They're not all, they don't have these like strong, limits to them. They all sort of flow into each other. It's kind of a dance. So you're going to hear some of this stuff that maybe sounds like what I talked about last week in The Victim, or is, you know, one aspect of one type of the child archetype kind of sounds like maybe the other one. So they are interchangeable here. So the essence of the child, like I said, it's all about responsibility, independence, your ability to be resourceful. And I don't just mean physical resources, I mean psychological and spiritual resources also. And then being able to balance that inner child innocence. The child represents is the symbol of the guardian of the innocence and responsibility. So the child has everything to do with our perceptions of life, safety, nurturance, loyalty, and family. If somebody has abandonment wounds, for example, now we're just going to move right into the wounded or the orphan child. Somebody with abandonment wounds, somebody who sees themselves as the black sheep of the family, somebody who feels like they never belonged to their family system, or somebody that didn't receive the proper nurturing to become independent and responsible, might have a tie to the wounded child. And so they may be stuck in memories of childhood abuse and neglect. And if they're stuck there, what does that mean? Well, it means that they might have a really hard time forgiving. The benefit of really looking at what style or flavor or nuance of the child lives in you, and if the wounded or the orphan child lives in you, the benefit is that it cracks open the opportunity to really learn the essence of forgiveness. And what is forgiveness really all about? It's about untying ourselves, untethering ourselves from the past so we can move on. It's about moving on and letting it go. And a lot of times in adulthood, people really can't do that. They're really limited in that way. And so they are in arrested development. They are acting out a repressed regret. Well, I should really say regressed. Regressed childhood wound that they are now carrying with them for the rest of their life. And if you perceive somebody as harming you in some way, to the point where you can't forgive them, how does it make any sense to have what they did to you, or how they mistreated you, how they abused you, how they neglected you? How does it make sense for you to still be a slave to that trauma for your entire life, when most people that say that they can't forgive, it's because they don't want to give that win to the other person? That's the perception. I'm not going to forgive that person because then I'm saying it's okay and I'm letting them off the hook. But they cannot see that through the lack of forgiveness, they have chained themselves to the past. And they're the ones that's not free. The person who harmed you, abused you, or neglected you has probably gone on with their life and doing just fine, frankly. It's you that's suffering. You have the ball and chain to the past of your childhood, but yet you think you forgiving sets them free? But where are you? You're in quicksand, and you've been there your whole adult life because you can't let it go. And so my perspective on dealing with the child, all aspects, but particularly the wounded child, is that whatever happened, happened. It is what it is. Can you let it go is the question, and accept, come to a place of acceptance that maybe things didn't go the way you expected or wanted to or felt like you know, were supposed to have. At some point, you have to ask yourself, it doesn't really matter anymore what happened. The question is can I just let it go regardless? And the people that are stuck in this wounded child really have a hard time with this one. And what happens is the wounded child will overshadow your ability to be creative, to be resourceful, to be responsible and independent, and now you're out of balance. And you may even see people that carry this strongly as being quite needy also. They're always wanting someone to tend to the childhood wounds, even though they're a full-blown adult at this point. And so their ability to carve out a path to survival can be stunted, and they may have a deep-rooted unconscious fear of actually surviving in this world. So there's the fear runs deep on this one. If we just look at myth and fairy tale, we're talking about some of my favorites. Snow White. When I was a little kid, I was Snow White in a Halloween costume competition. I won. Awesome costume. Snow White, Bambi, Cinderella, Hansel and Gretel, and the best of the best, The Little Mermaid, where she did not feel like she was supposed to be a mermaid. She didn't feel like she belonged in that family and wanted to become a human being. So I feel like the wounded child, you know, for decades now, there's been this whole movement about healing the wounded inner child. And I think in order to do that work successfully, you cannot be looking at the world through the eyes of the wounded child as the adult and expect that you're going to heal that wounded child. You have to quiet that inner child down, give it the hug that it needs, and then move on. And you need to call that adult in order to help you do that. You need to call in your adult archetype that has allowed you the opportunity now to be responsible and independent in the ways that you have been able to successfully facilitate that in your life. That's what you need to come in to reparent that wounded child. And so my perspective on the compassionate inquiry style that the therapist is serving in the role to do the reparenting, that's kind of where I split from Gabor Mate's teachings. That's probably the reason why I've kind of moved away from it a little bit. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it just doesn't jive with my style. Because my style is like, you got to wake up inside yourself. Nobody can do this work but you. And if we step in to reparent as the therapist, we are creating more dependency. Because now that person's seeing us as the parent that can come in and parent their wounded inner child. So they're going to stay the wounded inner child. The therapist is now going to be the adult, which means now that client is going to project the parent onto the therapist. And then now how is that client going to wake up their inner adult if the therapist is going to do it for them? No, this is about waking up your own inner adult and having this healing relationship start to actually unfold so you can move on, so you can cut off the ball and chain and accept whatever the past was, it was. But you stay in the wounded child and you're living in the past. So people are going to get super depressed when this is their primary archetype, their primary child that's showing up. All right, so now let's move on to the divine child. This isn't a very common one because in myth, it's Jesus, Horus in the Egyptian mythology. It's all about a redemption mission. It's the child that is in the divine form, in the divine family. So at the start of the Piscean Age, whatever it was, 2,000, 3,000 years ago, you had this, you know, Mother Mary, Jesus, God, triangular family. This was sort of like the beginning of, you know, the Christian archetype of the divine family, where this child has godlike qualities and a divine strength, frankly, to confront injustices arrogance in other people and other negative qualities. A lot of times you see the divine child play out when the family system projects the divine child onto the newborn. So it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're the first boy in our family. You are magic. You know, we've been waiting for you. Or the parents that have been waiting for a child forever and they've been trying to have a child and finally they do. And it's like, oh my God, you're a gift from God, right? Like you are God. And so, and it also has to do with like what you name your child too. You're going to project the divine child onto that child if you're naming them names that are consistent with divine figures. The shadow side of this archetype is when the person has an inability to defend themselves from their inner darkness and the darkness of others. And like I said, these boundaries with these archetypes are fluid, and so you can see how that can easily turn into the victim, where the person doesn't have boundaries. They're not able to actually protect their soul and keep their soul inside the castle of their heart. And it just jumps out and just runs wild and just is just floundering. So I want to bring up the divine child because I think a lot of times it's kind of projected onto the child, but it's very rare that people choose the divine child as one of the variations of the child archetype that they identify as their survival child archetype. Now we move into the nature child. Hello. Welcome, everybody. This is moi, okay? These are people who want to be veterinarians. I wanted to be a vet when I was a little kid. That was the first question you would ask me if I was a little kid. What I want to be when I grow up? It was a veterinarian. Because as an only child, my friendship always was connected more deeply to animals than humans. Animal rights activists carry the nature child very strongly. And you will find that they typically have harmony with nature. They typically have some sort of affinity for it. Now, here's the shadow side. It's not always light on this one. They may be connected to nature in some way, but it could be from the shadow side, which means they might actually have a tendency to abuse nature. Like, I do not have a green thumb. I'm trying really hard to keep these plants alive in my house, and I feel terrible. I just got this app where I can take a photo of the plant, and then it's going to tell me what's wrong with the plant, because it's like, you know, this is like not a part that I'm totally inclined to kind of work with in harmony. The nature child can also have the tendency to abuse animals and people. So I remember just thinking back on the just years of living in the city, and always being so busy and always having a hectic life and thinking that it was okay to just put my dogs out in the yard. It was a big yard. They got to run around. But to not take dogs out on walks on a daily basis and allow them to get access to different scents and be socialized, that is a form of abuse. And so you think you're taking wonderful care of these animals because you're giving them all this love and nurturance and attention, and you don't see yourself as harming them. But oftentimes the nature child is blind to the way in which they actually neglect or abuse animals and the environment. Okay, now moving on to the eternal child. The eternal child is the archetype of, in myth and fairy tale, Peter Pan. It is the inability to grow up, like truly. Determined to remain young in mind, body, and spirit identifies what the qualities of this archetype is. I remember there was one time where I was dating somebody, and it was before I was really doing deep work on the archetypes. And I was like, oh, you have the Peter Pan. Peter Pan syndrome? And like, I thought steam was going to come out of this dude's ears, like for real. Totally incapable of functioning in the world as an adult. You'll often see this with people that you can't rely on them. They're not dependable. They don't show up on time, and they resist the aging process altogether. They might go to extreme lengths to try to stay young. You'll also see this in people who are like overly dependent on others for their physical survival. So I've seen this quite a bit in clients throughout the years of like just not capable of showing up on time to session. It's like you can't even function in the world if you cannot show up on time to something, especially when somebody's already spoken to you about it and addressed it. So it's like, you know, this is where it starts to get complicated as a therapist, because it's like, if you're the type of therapist that isn't going to entertain the child and you're going to identify it and maybe call it out and then really task that person with quieting that child down so maybe the adults in the room can speak, that's you can't work with clients that aren't going to show up on time. It's just the way it is. And you're going to have to refer them to another therapist that might be able to take a different style that, I don't know, maybe could be more helpful to them. But you can't really compromise your values totally just because you're a therapist. You got to stay true to who you are and what you see to be beneficial and also what works for you. You can't just tend to the needs of everybody that comes to you and totally forget about what your needs are when meeting somebody else's needs is now going to drain you and burn you out. So, you know, there's kind of like a balance there around fit, whether or not somebody's a good fit to work with a particular therapist with a particular style. So now, I mean, when I work with people now, I try to be really clear about what my approach is up front because I want people to know what they're signing up for and what's also expected of them. And so when you are dealing with the eternal child, you're dealing with somebody who has not laid the foundation for a functioning adulthood because they're still too caught up in the essence of, you know, just remaining young and being kind of irresponsible and not dependable. So that one I see a lot. I don't see the nature child as much. I don't see the divine child as much. I definitely see the eternal and I definitely see the wounded. Now, the magical child sounds similar to the eternal child, but this one I think is actually more evolved and more mature because they see any and everything as possible. They're not limited by restriction of ideas. They have a wonderful imagination and they pursue them. They pursue their ideas. So it's like, oh, I have an idea to do something. I'm just going to do it. I carry this one quite a bit. It's just that the shadow side of this is that you can easily get seduced into seeing the good in everybody and everything and the potential in everybody and everything. And that can be the hook that gets you into tricky situations. The light side of this archetype is about having wisdom in the face of difficult circumstances. So seeing people as generally good, but having good boundaries at the same time and not being seduced by your own illusion of what potential you're projecting onto somebody. Well, they have so much potential, so I'm going to give them another chance. It's like, you know, you got to watch out for that one. And then, you know, the shadow side of any archetype is oftentimes the complete opposite. So the shadow side of the magical child could be not believing in miracles, pessimism, the inability to see how to transmute evil into good. And the way that I see it play out a lot of times with folks is a retreat into the fantasy world. They cannot break away from their mind splitting off into fantasy because maybe that was a protective mechanism for them when they were younger too. So they'll retreat away from the actual physical world that we live in and live too much in imagination and fantasy where they stay there and that's their reality and then they don't manifest anything. They don't create anything because they've already gotten their need met by staying in the fantasy for as long as they have. They actually don't need to create it now. So that one can be tricky. And then we get to the dependent child. Now, people with dependent personality disorders definitely are speaking from the dependent child archetype. And so this one is, if you can identify people in your life, now I already mentioned neediness with the wounded child, but I feel like the dependent child is kind of just a severe form of the wounded child because it is severe neediness. It is like, again, the personality disorder. I mean, this is this person through and through and through, no matter who they're with, what they're doing, nothing is ever enough. You can never give this person enough attention. You can never do enough for this person. And what really it stems from is the wound in which they are now unconsciously looking to replace something that was lost in their childhood. So similar to the wounded, they're caught in the childhood. And now they're trying to get something out of everybody around them, which is this reparenting. And that will result oftentimes in severe depression for folks. It's also a very self-absorbed, you're totally absorbed inside the self, only focusing on your own needs, and therefore an inability, and you're incapable and unable to see and respond in a healthy way to the needs of others. years and years ago, I worked with a few different clients actually around this time that had such glaring dependent personality traits that, you know, on a Friday at like 9 p.m., they'd be texting me, telling me, you know, that they don't feel good and what are they going to do and how are they going to handle this dilemma that just came up and what just happened at school and what just happened at work and all this stuff. And it's like Friday at 8 o'clock. It's like, I'm an adult human being that also has needs, like maybe going to sleep, maybe having my workday end. And there was no capacity for these particular people at this time that I was working with to really see that, like, people have needs that have nothing to do with you. And like, that's not being respected because the focus is solely on their own needs. And a lot of times when you set boundaries with people like this, they'll quit therapy because they don't know how to respond in a healthy way to the needs of the other person. The goal of this particular archetype, the dependent child, is to learn what healthy dependency actually looks like. And as an adult, if you're described as being overly needy and overly dependent on somebody else, chances are you're going to push a lot of people away because you're so caught in this arrested development style of the child that you can't even see the needs of the other person. So it becomes incredibly narcissistic, incredibly self-centered, and totally absorbed inside the experience of the self, where they can't even detach from that to say like, maybe she wants to go to bed right now. Maybe she has a life that she's trying to live. Maybe it's not appropriate for me to be asking for my needs to be met at Friday, on Friday at 8 o'clock. You know what I mean? So, and I moved out of that work where it was more in the space of coaching and moved more into the space of therapy, because at least with therapy, there are boundaries. And coaching, with your coach, like, it's kind of like either a spoken or an unspoken rule that the client has access to the coach kind of all the time. And that's why coaching oftentimes can perpetuate dependency. You're also kind of coaching people, telling people what to do, as opposed to guiding them to find the answers on their own. That'll breed dependency too. So if you're a coach and you work for a coaching agency and you're familiar with what I'm talking about and you're not comfortable with it, chances are you're probably just not the right fit for the coaching world, because that is the coaching world. So yeah, so that's the essence of all the child. That's the family of the children right there. And they're a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, it can be tough, really tough, incredibly difficult to try to function as an adult when your child is overshadowing your adult voice. And you can even see it. Like, you can even see how people will regress into childlike behaviors as adults. I mean, like tantrums, like their voice will start to change where they sound like they're a child. Paris Hilton kind of played on this in a pop culture kind of way brilliantly. And she talks about it in the documentary that is about her life and where she is now. She's really grown up quite a bit. I have a lot of respect for her, actually. She gets a lot of crap, but I think, you know, her growing process was played out in the public eye, and she had a lot of pressure on her from the family that she came from, that she kind of just like figured out a way to manipulate the masses and do this kind of baby childlike talk, and it got her all of the attention that she was looking for. And now she's kind of like off the grid. Like, she doesn't really put her life out there as much. And so, you know, people do evolve and they do grow out of these things. But sometimes it takes a lot of work to help facilitate that. And oftentimes they have to come to the realization on their own. Even if they're in therapy, there's really not a whole lot a therapist can do to try to help you see that now's the time to make the change. Sometimes people really just have to get there on their own time after they've seen how their behavior has pushed people away. And that's when they'll start to say like, oh my God, wow, yeah, I am really needy. I'm a real needy person. I'm like not grounded in reality at all. And that's annoying to people. And it is, frankly. I'm just going to tell it to you straight. Don't think that if you have any of these archetypes showing up in your therapy session that your therapist is like loving it, because I guarantee you they're not. And so that's where frustration will come in, and that's where a good therapist is going to come in and challenge you to say like, So I'm hearing the child here, but here's the thing. I don't work with children. I work with adults. So I'm going to need you to call in the adult archetype here to really ground us in this conversation, because if I'm just speaking to the child, that's not going to work. So we got to shift. We got to make a little bit of a shift here, and we got to be able to recognize that, you know, we are not the center of our universe, even just from an archetypal perspective. Our family of archetypes is that. It is a family. There's more than just one. So when we have a version of our child showing up that wants to be the number one and solo voice, that means everybody else has to be quiet. And it means everybody else gets shut down. And you can see how this plays out too. Like, I've been at conferences before where I've seen somebody's inner child show up and it shuts the whole room down. And everybody's petrified of that little tantruming little child that wants their way and wants to be the only voice to dominate that whole space. And typically people don't have the guts to stand up to the inner child, because when it comes from the adult, it's kind of scary. You can do it when it's a child and say like, okay, Tommy, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Maybe you can have that chocolate bar after dinner. Let's just calm it down. It's like, we don't need to scream bloody murder over here. Go get it. You're just not getting it right now. You know, like, we can handle little kids doing it. But when that inner child comes out from the adult, oh my God. I mean, you'll send chills up people's spine and then everybody clams right up. I saw one person do this in a conference that I was at and I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what was playing out in front of my eyes. And this person dictated rules to a whole group of adult men and women who all just shrunk in their chairs. And then they did everything that this person told them to do. And what this person was telling them to do was like so about that person, not about the energy of the space. And so it became all about that person. And I was just like, I'm just sitting there like, you cannot make this stuff up. So the inner child, when it's used through the adult body, is very manipulative, because it will dictate the course of an entire situation. And then all eyes are on that child. And they just got everything that they wanted. They wanted to be the center of attention and they wanted to be the domineering voice in the room. And it works. It does work. So when I said in the last episode, you know, we don't do things that aren't in some part reinforcing, this is why the child is so evident in so many adult lives, because it freaking works to get the needs met. And it doesn't help. Do you see a person healing who can throw a tantrum and shut an entire room down? I mean, so it works to get the need met in that moment to be heard and seen and validated. But do you see that person goes on and lives this fulfilling, highly functional adult life where they are thriving? No. You see that person always playing that manipulation in every situation that they're in, which means there's a false sense of the need getting met in the first place. Because if the need was really met by what they were doing, they wouldn't keep doing what they were doing. It's met just enough for them to keep doing it, but not enough for them to actually grow and change and evolve and transform. And so they just stay. They stay stuck. When people reach out to therapists and they're like, you know, I'm stuck in my life. Chances are you're stuck in one of these child archetypes. Stuck means being able to not move on, which means you're in the past. And if you're an adult and you're stuck in the past, chances are you're stuck in childhood. So the child is really a force to be reckoned with. And it's kind of like how a parent will be in a supermarket and a kid will start throwing a tantrum. And it's like the parent, I see a lot of parents actually in public handle this really well, where they just take the kid right out of the store. But maybe years ago, they would just let that kid tantrum. But, you know, that'll freak a parent out, because it's like, oh my God, my kid's having a meltdown in the store. Everybody's looking at me. They're going to think what kind of parent I am. They're going to judge me, and they freak out. And then so they have to remove that child, and then hopefully they're doing, you know, sound work with that kid when they get outside the store and not just caving and giving in to what the kid wants. But I mean, anybody that's a parent kind of knows that feeling of like, let me just give this kid this candy bar and shut him up. You know what I mean? That kid just owned you. That kid just dominated you and you caved. And this happens more so when the child is inside the adult and manifests through the adult than if it's just a little kid tantruming, because you can kind of handle that a little bit better. But I say this because I think it speaks to how powerful, when that child speaks, it'll shut the whole room down. And it's probably the reason why a lot of the therapists that I know and respect won't entertain this. Will not. I mean, I know therapists that work with adults, not children, and will put signs on their door that says, children are not welcome in the session. And they don't mean you're not allowed to bring your kid into your adult therapy session. They mean your child is not allowed to show up here today. I'm not enabling it. I'm not the one. Okay? And you can see why. Because you can lose control of an entire group session, an entire individual session, an entire conference, an entire event or situation when somebody's inner child pops up. And so, you know, take it for what it is. I mean, everybody's got a different style of therapy, but I've seen that child shut an entire room down of accomplished, professional, high-profile adults that shivered when that inner child in that adult spoke up and ran the whole show. And I'm just like, wow. Wow, this is unbelievable. So now you got everybody cowering in fear because that child woke up and said, I want it my way and I want it now. What is it, Veruca Salt and Willy Wonka? Is it Veruca Salt? The one that tantrums and says, I want it now, Daddy. I want it now. I want it and I want it now. It's like, okay, do you really? Isn't that interesting? You know, like that's kind of how you have to respond. Like, nah, too bad. Oh, well, not getting it. Now what? Moving on. You know, like you kind of have to take that approach if you're going to maintain control over a group or a situation or a setting. Because that child pops up, man, and it's like, woo. You can see it. You can see it just run right through everybody and everything that's receiving it. So So I say that because it's our job to make sure that we are reining in our inner child, but it's also our job to make sure that we're reining in the inner child of other people and not running away and not saying, okay, fine, do whatever you want. Because then we're enabling. And that helps nobody. Like I said, people whose inner child dictate the course of their life, they don't heal from that. They don't heal by doing that. So what good are we doing by allowing people's inner child to just dictate the whole show? It's like, no. You know, when Trump was getting to the end of his presidency, everybody said they wanted an adult back in the office. They didn't want a tantruming child anymore. But yet no one's willing to see how they enable the child and all the adults around them in their lives. So, I mean, we can see it when we kind of see it when it's far away from us. But how's that playing out in your own personal life? Because if you can see it out there, you're having a reaction, which means it's an archetypal activation inside of you, which means it belongs to you and probably the people around you. And how are you handling that? Are you the parent that just gives in to whatever the kid wants as soon as the kid starts tantruming? That's why you're having a reaction to the adults that you see that tantrum, you know? Like, when I was in that conference and I saw that adult's inner child pop up, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. I know what this is about, you know? Like, I saw it so instantly because I've had this experience and I have a reaction to this. So that's my work to do, to say like, okay, what's up with that with you, you know? Like, who's your dependent child? What relationship do you have with it? And how conscious of it are you? So always pay attention to what emotional reactions that are, whatever you have emotional reactions to, that's the window. That's the portal. It's going to tell you a lot. So I'm going to leave it there, everybody. Those are not all of the child archetypes, but those are the core ones. And so it just gives you something to chew on. You know what I'm saying? A little self-reflection, I'm sure, in everybody right now saying like, ew, yeah. Got a lot of those going on. And it's like, you know, when you carve out your archetypal wheel, you really should only be putting one child in that archetypal wheel when you carve it out and you pick your 12. Because you don't need more than one child energy in that bunch. Like, we got to get some more adults around here. So we kind of want adults running the show. We don't want children running the show. And as a society, I think we kind of have to wake up to this a little bit, because I think we got a lot of children running the show around here. I think everybody's getting a little tired of it. So anyway, I'll just couch that, and I will catch you guys on the next episode. We'll either do the prostitute or the saboteur, and then we'll get back to another fairy tale story hour. Also, the last 2 weeks in August, I will be off, so that we'll have a lull period there. No episodes will come out, and then we'll jump back in for the first week in September. So I will catch you guys on the next one, and may the light always lead your way. Be well, everybody. The Third Realm Integration Podcast and related content is intended to provide information and/or entertainment only, and is not a substitute for mental health or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not delay mental health or medical consultation, or substitute a mental health or medical professional's opinion because of what you heard on the show. Seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a mental health or medical condition. The host of this podcast does not provide emergency support for mental health or medical issues. For questions or concerns, visit your local emergency room or contact your doctor. Quote from Carl Jung himself: "Man's unconscious contains all the patterns of life and behavior inherited from his ancestors, so that every human child, prior to consciousness, is possessed of a potential system of adapted psychic functioning."